The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Graham Norton has now released his fifth fiction work. It's his eighth book. It's added to the list. So he has, I think, a million in total sales of books. He has The Wine. He has the TV show in Ireland on Virgin. He has the number one TV show in the BBC. It raises the question, Graham, surely you could just, at the level of success you've had, relax, put the feet up and not be so productive.
I could, but the thing is, I enjoy doing this. It is like my hobby. It's a thing I like doing because everything else in my life involves meetings. You know, even like the chat show, it might be called The Graham Norton Show. My name's over the door. I come out. I ask the questions. But there's a load of people work on that show. And, you know, they come up with questions. I come up with questions. They tell me they're stupid. Don't ask that. Do this. Da, da, da. It, you know, and I need those people. You know, if I was making that show by myself, it would not be that show.
But you see, my understanding was the reason you get into a job like this is because you finish the recording and then you get to walk away and not have to fret. And most of the real work is done by other people. This is real work.
Yeah, this is proper work, but it's by myself. And it's just me alone in a room. And I like that. I like getting lost in these stories. And, you know, a lot of them are set in West Cork, which is a place I really like. So that's quite nice to spend time in my head there when I can't go back. You know, there's a bit of stress with the books. Like towards the end, then I'm thinking, why did I do this? Because you've got to finish it. You've got to, you know, then the notes come back, the corrections, you've got to polish it, all of that. And that's when it becomes kind of hard work. But most, I would say 90% of the writing I enjoy.
You do it where?
Anywhere. I'll have a laptop. I'm not one of the, you know, I'm not a full-time writer. You know, full-time writers will be, they're happy to wang on about their process. And, they're shed and they're this and they're, I write for 2 hours in the morning, then have a light lunch. Yeah, that's not me. If I've got, you know, a day, I'll, you know, open the laptop and I might open the Word document or I might just scroll the sidebar of shame on the Daily Mail for 12 hours.
Now, I would have thought that is particularly difficult in a novel like this, where what you are dealing with is effectively four decades, a number of significant main characters and three separate geographical locations. If you're not dedicating yourself day in, day out, that's a lot of stuff to keep in the head.
It is, but the good thing about it is, when I start a book, I'll devote kind of a chunk of time to it and then I'll kind of bed it in so I know who everyone is and da da da. And then the stuff that I think is going to happen or things that I want to happen. And by the time I come back to it, I'm like, oh no, actually, that won't happen. This will happen. Or, you know, you're out walking the dog and you'll suddenly go, oh, that doesn't need to happen. Or, oh, they could just die. You know. Yeah, I don't need to do that. So there's all that sort of stuff. So I think if I wrote these books in one sitting, I am writing a novel, I won't get up till I'm finished it, they would be very different books. I think it helps my process. There, I said it. Dear, people are turning off the radio in the droves. Graham said my process. that it helps me to do it piecemeal and over time.
While we are examining your process, explain to me the logic of going with, now she isn't always, but where she is for a lot of the book, is an elderly female lead character, because you are neither.
I'm not those things. I like writing female characters. I think female characters are more interesting in a way, in that I think women are more nuanced the way they have to navigate the world, because a lot of the time they are dealing in the world of men and they're kind of working around the men in their lives. And certainly Frankie does that, because she ends up in a relationship with a very kind of alpha male who finds all the success, and then it becomes sort of her role in life to shepherd him. And I think that happens a lot, and he's an artist, and I think you find it a lot with successful men, that there is an incredibly talented woman over there that we don't know. Like, I was in the U Lane Gallery and I saw this painting. I thought, oh, that looks lovely. And who's that? Grace Henry. It was Paul Henry's wife. I'd never heard of her. Really talented artist. Beautiful paintings. But history has chosen not to remember her. It's Paul that we know. And that's kind of one of the things I touch on in the book.
You also, you talk about her relationships. You examine some of her relationships earlier on. Now, maybe I am wrong. Maybe it's a Protestant thing. But there seems to be more sex in the 60s in Ireland than I recalled.
Is there more sex in the 60s? I feel like there's... I thought the point... No, this isn't a spoiler because I think there's remarkably little sex. Well, there's a lot of attempted sex.
But some of the attempts are quite florid, Graham.
Oh, actually, there is one bit. Yes,
yes,
no,
there is.
Yes, yes. Now you remind me of it. I remember blushing during the audiobook.
Oh, did you have to read that aloud?
Yes.
Oh.
With some sweaty man behind glass looking at me. It felt very wrong. I felt like I was working in Soho.
Do you give it an erotic flair when you do it, or do you just do it straight?
No, I just get through it. There's no noises.
Well, this brings me to, I remember, now maybe I'm wrong and I have constructed this memory, but my understanding, or at least my recollection, is that where your TV career originally started was in Quiz Filth.
Sadly, your memory is correct.
I knew it.
Yes. No, I did a thing called Carnal Knowledge, and it was a middle of the night, filthy kind of Mr. and Mrs. Quiz that I did with my friend Maria McCurlin. And she was the main host. I was the sidekick. It was my very, very first job. And in fact, while I remember, oh no, it wasn't. What it was, I remember I was rehearsing Father Ted, my first episode of Father Ted, and I had to ask them, can I leave the rehearsal early to go to audition to be
Carnal Knowledge?
And
you were in charge of the scores, if I remember rightly, weren't you?
Was I?
I think you were. I think she used to turn to you for the scores. Okay. Maybe it was
what
bad.
I'm getting is you watch this rubbish.
I was a fan.
Wow, that is a misspent youth. You should not have been up that late. You should not have been watching that.
But was that part of an overarching TV ambition? Like, were you driven to say, "I'm going to make it in TV"?
I mean, that seemed the logical place to go. You know, I was a stand-up by then. I'd trained as an actor, but I'd given up all ideas of acting. And then I was at Edinburgh and I was doing okay. And I got signed by, you know, for me, a good agent. I mean, there must be, I'm still with them. And she happened to represent Graham and Arthur, who wrote Father Ted. And she said to them, look, I've just got a new Irish client. Surely there's something. And that's how that meeting happened. And I got in that door. But then that was the last acting I ever did. I never did it again. And but, you know, when you're a stand up, what's the next thing? I suppose now you can film specials. You could do a Netflix special or something, or you could maybe write your own sitcom. But much easier just to do a bit of presenting. So that's what I did.
And then where does the writing fit in that? Did you want to write back then, or is that a relatively recent
thing? No, the writing kind of had been before that, when I was kind of at UCC, I was studying English, and, you know, I those sorts of pretensions back then, but no self-discipline or, you know, at that age, I'm sort of in awe of young writers because I think, really? You're in a room writing a novel? Don't you know? Don't you know what's going on out there? So I was very much out there. I was having a good time.
But see, this is why I'm intrigued by your current productivity, because I would have thought if there is a point where you are going to write, it's when you're trying to make ends meet and pay the rent and maybe a book.
Oh, really?
Sell. Oh, yeah. But I mean,
it's such a slow way to make money. If you're trying to make ends meet, work in a bar. Don't write a novel.
This is true. But at the current time, I would have thought you're in a position where you could say, do you know what, with this free time, rather than sitting at the laptop, I will go to Saint-Tropez or Monte Carlo or wherever it is you types go in your days off.
You types. I didn't come up with those places. They're dreaming in your head. They're living in your head rent free. Monte Carlo.
I don't know.
When was the last time someone went to Monte Carlo? like I say, this is my pleasure. And also, I don't do these books to kind of to make ends meet. You know, I'm in a really lucky position in that, as you say, I've got this job that pays very well. I do very well. And so on one level, financially, the stakes for me are very low. I guess reputationally, the stakes are quite high. But if I'd published that first book and everyone had gone, this stinks, I would have just, you know, allowed my friends to enjoy that very much and then licked my wounds. And even now, you know, even now, five novels in, and they've done, you know, as novels, they've done quite well. I would say when I walk out in front of that studio audience, I would say 75% of them do not know that I've ever written a novel. You know, the world of books, it's huge and it's big and people who love books adore books. But it's not mainstream still. There are books that cut through, you know, a Richard Osman or a Fifty Shades of Grey or those things.
Yeah.
You know, they will break through. But a novel like mine, it's still contained in the book world. And so actually, if that first book had been a really embarrassing failure, I'd have just got on with the chat show, slightly humiliated, but not, it wouldn't have wrecked my life.
There is one thing in the book, though. You treat the 80s AIDS epidemic in New York, when it would have been, I mean, New York, San Francisco would have been the US epicenters at that time, particularly among the gay community. Did you have any trepidation about touching something that is such a raw and delicate topic?
In a way, I mean, here's the thing. To be honest with you, I didn't think I was going to. It was stupid of me. I had Frankie's life journey planned out. And it was only when I got there, I realized, oh, hang on, she's working in restaurants in the 80s in New York. I can't pretend. It would have been weird if the specter of AIDS hadn't entered her world. And kind of that's how it happened. And in fact, I'm sort of pleased it has, because I think it's a real kind of emotional heart of the book. And it's in a way the climax of the book, I think. Is that section. And it, I felt okay about doing it because I was seeing it through Frankie's eyes. You know, she was at one remove from it. So people she loved might have been getting it, but I wasn't dealing. So it didn't, I felt like it didn't overwhelm the story. It didn't become an AIDS novel. It was just one aspect of her story. And I think that's the story of a life. You know, your life touches all sorts of things. You know, we all lived through COVID, but, you know, come the end of our lives, it's not just going to be that. It's going to be lots of other things. It's going to be weddings and funerals and, you know, highs and lows.
On that topic, COVID must have been weird for you. To go from 600 people in a studio audience to nobody must have been very strange.
It was difficult. That first series we did, we were just about to start production and the world shut down. And we kind of knew that was going to happen. So I think the day before the world shut down, we had green screen and a camera and computers and things delivered to my house. And we set up my back bedroom as a little makeshift studio. And Jono, my husband, not my husband then, he is a filmmaker. So, but he doesn't make television. He makes documentaries. But
close enough.
But no, exactly. Everyone at the studio were like, Jono can do it. So he was there, you know, pressing record, hoping that, you know, he was getting Lady Gaga while I would, you know, all that. It was quite a stressful time.
And very hard to get the vibe. Very hard to get that.
I know, it was impossible. It was impossible. But then by the time we got back into a studio, even though there was no audience, it felt like, oh, like Blackpool in the middle of summer, because there were cameramen, sound guys, you know, we were all masked up and everything. But it was people. It was somebody. And we'd got out of the house. And then we had little dribs and drabs of audience, and it was, you know, it was lovely.
Can I ask you one final thing, which is about the nature of your fame? Because one of the things that I'm always intrigued by is how the Irish look at people who have become successful in the UK. You are, by any objective measure, Ireland's most successful broadcaster. Well, you are. I mean, just if you look at audience terms, you are.
Let's go living.
So, but there is a sort of a sense that we don't see you in the Hello magazines and the VIPs. There is a sense that you're away and you're other. Do you find it that way? Do you find it?
I mean, that's been quite deliberate. It's been quite deliberate in that I think early doors I figured out. I mean, the good thing about me is success came to me later. You know, I was in my mid-30s when I found any success at all.
Merely a child, Graham. Let's
well,
be clear.
Yeah, it didn't feel like it at the time. I'll tell you now. And I figured out quite early on that if you embrace that sort of thing, you know, the red carpets, the going to showbiz parties, it's very hard to then shut the door on that. When you don't want that press interest, it's still there. And you can't really cry foul because you opened the door to hello. You said, oh, please come in and take
a picture. Come see my fireplace.
Yeah, please. I've got a new kitchen to pay for. Please take a picture of it. So I thought much better to pay for your own kitchen and not do hello. David Hyde Pierce, you know, from Fraser, he said a really good thing. He said, my life is an open book, but I choose not to read it aloud. And I think that's a very good way of doing it. So it's not like I have secrets.
But do you have a greater level of privacy in Ireland than you do in the UK? Are you less famous in Ireland?
I don't know.
As in, I always think if you were hosting The Late Late, I think you'd be more plagued in the street than you are hosting shows in the UK, despite multiple millions more watching you over there. It was a bit like you would have seen with Wogan, the same thing. There was a sense that Wogan had left.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, the difference, I suppose, between the two of us is Wogan had worked here a bit, you know, and then left. I've never worked in Ireland. I mean, that Amazon show I did here last year, that was the first time I've ever worked in Ireland. Apart from, like, working in a shop when I was a child. That was it. So I've never worked here. So I left to do nothing. Wogan went following a dream. I just left, and then I found some success. And I think that is a slight difference. I don't know. I guess I can't judge because, I never had a different reality. This is just what's going on.
And are you here often? Do you spend much time at home?
I am here a lot. I'm not in Dublin very often. I don't know Dublin really well. I was born here, but we left when we were two, and I've never really spent time here. So I don't really know my way around or anything. So it's Cork I go back to, and particularly West Cork. And Bantry is kind of, that's my stomping ground. And I spend as much time there as I can. I spend, a few months every year. That's the end of my summer now, so I'll be back for Christmas, hopefully. I'll be back in November, my mother's birthday. Let's not forget that.
No, let's not. Hugely successful TV show. Million books at this point. You've crossed the million mark, haven't you, in total sales?
Oh, sales. Yeah. I was thinking, I remember writing that many. I mean, all right, it's a lot.
Boo's going very well. What's next for the industrious Graham Norton?
I don't have a next.
Oh,
really.
Come on, you must.
I really don't. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I'm going the other way in that I've just stopped doing the radio. After 13 years, I stopped doing the weekends on the radio. So I'm kind of, whittling things down. I've knocked 10 weeks off the chat show as well. So now I'm on for half the year and off for half the year. Which is very nice.
Very simple.
So you see, I'm not the workaholic you try to paint me as. In fact, I'm quite lazy.
Graham, great pleasure to talk to you. That is Graham Norton, and the new book is Frankie.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.